Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is the Cryptoconomy, and I am Guy Swan. We're actually going to take, since we finished up the money section, we've talked a lot about gold and the history of money and the nature of money throughout most of the week. I wanted to actually take a break from that piece before we get back to Bitcoin, because there's this great new series that Parker Lewis has been doing on unchained-capital.com. It's called Gradually, Then Suddenly, and this is the same, like, that's not really the title. They each have individual titles, but this is the Gradually, Then Suddenly weekly series that he has done, and it's such a fun read. I definitely recommend actually following the Unchained Capital blog, because I've been trying to hit, I'm actually still a little bit behind right now, but I've been trying to hit these pretty regularly, because they're good stuff for like little snippets of just hitting home some specific concept or topic around Bitcoin. And that is what we're going to hit today. I really want to talk about this one. And this is the, is this July 26th? This is the first one, I believe. Am I August 9th? I think this is the first one that I had saved. I'll confirm just in case. But this one is titled Gradually, Then Suddenly. You know, I actually had the opportunity to meet Parker at the BitBlog Boom conference, and we had a lot of fun. It was actually, I didn't get to hang out with him much, but it was funny. We were sitting there chatting for a bit, and then it struck me who he was after. I can't remember exactly what he said. It might even be that like somebody mentioned one of these pieces, and I was like, "Wait a second, wait, you're Parker Lewis?" And you know, so it's like I got to meet him twice. But it was actually really cool to meet him. If he actually listens to this, just so I want to say, Parker, it's cool to meet you, man. I love this series. I love Unchained Capital. Y'all have some amazing stuff that y'all have done. So without further ado, let's just jump right in to this piece. This was published on July 26th of this year, Gradually, Then Suddenly by Unchained Capital. Introduction. This is the first of a weekly series that I've decided to write on the subject of Bitcoin, inspired by my friends Marty Bent and Saifedean Ammas. Education is such a critical aspect of Bitcoin, and I hope that, by distilling my own thoughts, I can help others accelerate their path in understanding a complex subject. I've titled the series, Gradually, Then Suddenly. As Hemingway penned the process of going bankrupt, it's also the way that government-backed currencies hyperinflate and often how people come to understand Bitcoin. Gradually, then suddenly. Writings will generally stick to Bitcoin, but will also include the Fed and monetary economics, as these stories are deeply intertwined. Because I'll be trying to keep it concise, the series will communicate my principal conclusions and opinions rather than setting out to present every detail that led to them. My intention is to provide insight into my thought process and to provide a roadmap if others are interested in learning more. My hope is to reach a broader audience beyond those that have been formative in my own journey and to help folks on the periphery gain a better understanding of why many of us are so focused on Bitcoin as a subject matter. Views presented are expressly my own and not those of either Unchained Capital or my colleagues. I hope you enjoy and please provide feedback. Bitcoin is money. Or rather, Bitcoin has become money to me. It was a slow process that involved unlocking a number of mental blocks along the way. But it began with asking the question, what is money? That is the beginning of the real rabbit hole. And not the speculative, I'm looking for a lottery ticket, blockchain is going to change the world kind of rabbit hole. At the root level It's the rabbit hole that attempts to answer the question, why is the dollar in my pocket money? Why do hundreds of millions of people exchange their hard-earned, real-world value every day for this piece of paper or digital representation? It's both a difficult question to ask and a harder one to answer, something I realized everyone has to approach in their own way, on their own timeline, and guided by their own life experiences. People have to be interested in that question in order to even begin to understand Bitcoin. For me, the path involved first understanding why gold was money. That involved understanding the unique properties which made something a better or worse form of money, and what differentiated money as a unique economic good compared to most other types of economic goods. The Bitcoin standard was formative for me in exploring the questions, not as a gospel, but rather as a foundation to think about the problem statement. When I applied that foundation to my own life experiences and to my own understanding of the existing financial system and its flaws, only then did it begin to become intuitive. And that's something that may be evident, that Bitcoin is intuitive as money, to those who have spent years thinking about it relative to monetary principles. But it's also true that Bitcoin is not intuitive. It's extremely not intuitive until it becomes intuitive, and then over time, it becomes hyper-intuitive. As part of my process, I found it helpful to consider Bitcoin relative to two tangible guideposts, gold and the dollar financial system. Does A, Bitcoin, share the properties of B, either gold or the dollar, respectively? Is A better than B? Because what makes something money is not an absolutism. It's a choice between storing value in one medium versus another, always involving trade-offs. Without understanding the flaws of the existing financial system, whether the dollar, euro, yen, bolivar, peso, etc., respectively, I could have never arrived at Bitcoin being money in a vacuum. While I worked at Deutsche Bank during the financial crisis, I had no baseline to understand what was actually happening. 10 years later, and after having worked in the restructuring world and at a macro hedge fund, only then did I start to develop a more clear understanding of what had really transpired in 2008 and 2009. Through my own research of the great financial crisis, the Fed, and specifically the impact of quantitative easing, I came to the principal conclusion that the root problem was that the financial system had been leveraged approximately 150 to 1, too much debt and too few dollars, and that the insane degree of leverage was only made possible as a function of Fed policy, which had consistently prevented system-wide deleveraging over the course of the 3 decades leading up to the crisis. Further, it became apparent that the solution, quantitative easing, merely caused an unsustainable credit system to metastasize over the subsequent 10 years, making future QE an inevitability. I became convinced that whether Bitcoin survives or not, the existing financial system is working on borrowed time, and that one way or another, something other than the status quo will be the inevitable path forward. Then I figured out that Bitcoin has a fixed supply. Developing an understanding of how and why that is possible is the basis of understanding Bitcoin as money. Doing so requires significant personal investment in understanding how economic incentives are woven together with Bitcoin's technical architecture and why Bitcoin can't be faked or copied. Or rather, why the incentives are so strong to cooperate and why the opportunity cost is too high to defect. It's a long road, but will ultimately lead one to an understanding that a global network of rational economic actors operating within a voluntary opt-in currency system would not collectively and overwhelmingly form a consensus to debase the currency, which they have all independently and voluntarily determined to use as a store of value. This reality, or belief system, then underpins and reinforces Bitcoin's economic incentives, technical architecture, and the network effect. So, it's not simply that software code dictates that there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. It's understanding why that monetary policy is credible and resilient and how Bitcoin achieves verifiable scarcity. That can't happen overnight for any individual. It can't be explained to someone at a cocktail party. It is a reality that is reinforced and strengthened over time only by experiencing the incentive structure and seeing it work time and time again, every 10 minutes on average. When then compared to how the dollar system works or even the underpinnings of gold, Bitcoin as money becomes more intuitive. In summary, when trying to understand Bitcoin as money, start with gold, the dollar, the Fed, quantitative easing, and why Bitcoin's supply is fixed. Money is not simply a collective hallucination or a belief system. There is rhyme and reason. Bitcoin exists as a solution to the money problem that is global QE. And if you believe the deterioration of local currencies in Turkey, Argentina, or Venezuela could never happen to the US dollar or to a developed economy, we are merely at a different point on the same curve. Bitcoin represents a fundamentally different structure and a more resilient path forward, but you have to understand where we've been and how we got here to know where we're going. Hayek writes about the price mechanism as the greatest distribution system of knowledge in the world, linked to the use of knowledge in society. When the money supply is manipulated, it distorts global pricing mechanisms, which then communicates bad information throughout the economic system. When that manipulation is sustained over 30 or 40 years, massive imbalances in underlying economic activity are created, which is where we find ourselves today. Ultimately, gold's failure was the dollar, and the dollar's failure is the economic distortion which led to, and which has been exacerbated by, quantitative easing. Bitcoin's promise is the solution to both. Because Bitcoin's supply is fixed and cannot be manipulated, it will eventually become the most reliable pricing mechanism in the world, and consequently, the greatest distribution system of knowledge. The volatility witnessed today is nothing more than the logical path of price discovery, as adoption increases by orders of magnitude, and as we advance toward that future state of full adoption. Quote, establishment economists deride the fact that Bitcoin is volatile, as if you can go from something that didn't exist to a stable form of money overnight. It's completely ludicrous. End quote. Vijay Poyapati on Stefan Levera podcast. Next week, copying Bitcoin, the audacity of trying to print your own money. And that concludes Parker Lewis's Gradually, Then Suddenly on the Unchained Capital blog. Let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and then I want to hit a lot of commentary on this really, really great introduction into this series that he is writing, and I have been loving it. So let's hit our sponsor, and we'll come right back. Bitcoin only, automatic purchases, low fees, great team, really simple setup, automatic withdrawal to your own keys even, and $10 free. SwanBitcoin.com/guy. Does it get any easier than that? Is there a better system? Seriously, I'm asking because I don't know. I don't know how you get better. You know how the iPhone was basically like the conclusion of the smartphone interface? Everything since 2008 or wherever is just a big screen with a touch interface. Swan Bitcoin is the conclusion of the Bitcoin savings plan. You buy automatically, you set it up once and it just runs, and it's got automatic withdrawals to your hardware wallet.
plus smash buy whenever you've got fiat burning a hole in your pocket. Does it need anything else? Does it? I'm seriously asking. All right, so this piece, again, this was by Parker Lewis, and it's on unchained-capital.com on their blog. And this is the start of a really great series, and there are already five episodes or iterations of this series, and they're all really good. So he's hitting these topic by topic. We'll probably be covering more of them on the show. I think he seemed to be totally like, go ahead, you know, just that sounds great. We will probably be hitting more of these on the show. And a thank you to Parker Lewis for putting these together, because I love these little short snippets. And it's good writing, too. It's like, it flows really well. Sometimes, like, people, myself included, will just get lost in some technical detail or deep in the weeds around one specific thing that's not really all that important. And forget to just kind of step back and hit that broad argument as to what's happening here. And the one thing that you cannot get across enough is that this is all about money. And if you don't know, unfortunately, ignorance around money is probably the greatest chasm of ignorance in our society as any topic. Or, I mean, shit, you could probably argue that more people understand nuclear physics just in a general sense than they have the general idea of money. And even though it's probably been mentioned about a billion times on this show and in numerous pieces that we have read, the Bitcoin Standard is a really great one for getting that history of money, getting the idea of like why and how gold came about to be money. Of course, the dominant characteristics of money that are so important. In fact, we just covered these in Breedlove's piece, Money, Bitcoin, and Time, which obviously we are still going through, but we have just finished the money section. So if you haven't listened to parts 1, 2, and 3 of that, to do a little deep dive into this topic, that's a really great one to start with. It is a little bit extraordinary to me how many times now, like how broad the scope of people who are finally seeing our monetary system for what it is. Back in 2008 and 2009, when I was starting to find out for the first time, it was really the financial crisis that set me off in my search for how the hell does something like this happen? What caused such a massive systemic crash like this? And I read a great book by Thomas Sowell, and then there was one that came out shortly after. I can't remember the name of Tom Wood's book. But I read one by Tom Woods as well, and just kept going further and further into the economics of it as to how could this happen. And eventually you end up, if you keep chasing it until you find the why of the individual, of each individual piece, it's like, okay, well, why did people invest in, you know, bad investments? Why was the money available? Why could they afford it? Like, you just kind of keep going down this rabbit hole. And in the end, you end up at the price controls of the Federal Reserve. The fact that we have an institution, it can create money out of thin air and therefore manipulate the price of money over time, which is the interest rate. That's the price of using resources over a span of time. And what ends up happening is that when they manipulate that, like, it's an incredibly critical price. I mean, it's just like anything else. If you manipulate the price of bread to below the market price, well, then you run out of bread on the shelves. People, A, the demand increases because they're like, oh, wow, bread's cheap. I'm going to go buy up a bunch of bread. But then at the same time, the supply vanishes because nobody's going to make bread for free. You know, nobody's going to do it for charity, or at least you're not going to get the explosion of market production that you get when there's a profit margin to produce a good for other people. The simple truth is price controls don't work. Socialist planning of the economy, central planning of economic allocation of resources doesn't work. It always collapses. And the fact that the most critical good of all society, that money, the veritable foundation of society, is being manipulated in this way, of course we're going to have problems. Of course. It would happen to bread. Of course it will happen to money. It's just, it's so integral and at the exact same time so misunderstood that people just don't see it until essentially the bill comes due. But it's when you find out that Bitcoin has a fixed supply that this entire system of fighting politically over how much money is going to be printed, what's the interest rate supposed to be according to these experts of price predictors in the market, and how are we going to manipulate things to make people go more into debt instead of saving money for the future? I mean, you think about the sheer arrogance of that, that they're going to manipulate a market indicator to get people to go more into debt and waste resources on like just consumer spending and stuff than to have them save for the future so that their future is better and more sustainable than they are in their situation today. That's so arrogant and just awful. Like when you really think about it, like, of course we're all in debt. Of course we're all like living from hand to mouth. They've created a system in which that's the only way to get by. They've pushed us all into this and simultaneously taken all of the avenues we have to actually get out. Like the way you get out of poverty and low, like unsustainable, like financial situations is you start to use that compounding effect of accumulating capital. And you should be able to do that with just money. You should be able to do that. You should not have to fight to keep the value of your money. It is the most basic available to everyone. There's no hierarchy. You don't have to sign up for you don't have to get involved in the stock market. You don't have to risk anything. It is the most basic way to build a foundation with which to have a better future. And it's being stolen. That's absolutely insane. It's criminal is what it is, really. And I love that just the whole idea of the gradually but suddenly thing, because it just rings so true that when you start to see these things, first you have to just open yourself to asking the questions. What is money? What the hell is QE? How could we even have a system that makes this possible? How could the banks be so incredibly irresponsible and then just nobody pays? Nobody pays for it. Thousands of people lose their jobs. Thousands of people lose their houses. Lives are upended. And it's all because of the actions and the decisions that created enormous imbalance in institution A, B, C, and D. And none of them go out of business. None of them get punished. Trillions of dollars vanished into thin air. And millions of people paid the price, except for the people who were responsible for it. That's a little bit nuts. But that the whole gradually, then suddenly thing is just so neat. Where's the thing? I've titled the series Gradually, Then Suddenly, as Hemingway penned The Process of Going Bankrupt. It's also the way that government-backed currencies hyperinflate and often how people come to understand Bitcoin. Gradually, then suddenly. Just thought that was a wonderful, great, great little piece. And rings so true. I know anybody who's like deep into Bitcoin at this point probably felt that, where you get that those initial questions, and then you start going down the rabbit hole, and then suddenly you're lost. It's like you lost your feet, or you know, maybe you let go of the railing and it just starts tumbling and you just can't go back. Everything before the rabbit hole suddenly seems so nonsensical, and you wonder how the hell you weren't seeing it before. Things become so clear, and then obviously when you start looking back at the regular system, when you see what they're doing to quote-unquote get out of the problems, you're like, holy crap, how do I protect myself from this? And Bitcoin ends up being, like, when he mentions the volatility, he's actually got an entire piece, Parker wrote an entire piece in this Gradually Then Suddenly series about just volatility. And the idea that people continue to use the volatility of Bitcoin as an excuse for why it doesn't work is funny on a couple of reasons, or ridiculous for a couple of reasons. One is that it's been volatile since it began, and it is continuing to work very well in spite of that volatility. Two is the one that he quotes from Vijay and then alludes to himself, is that how on earth do you get from A to B? It makes no sense. The reason, this is a critical part, the reason a monetary system or a monetary good is stable in the market is because it is the most liquid good. That's it. That's why it becomes a unit of account, because it is the most liquid good in the economy. Is Bitcoin the most liquid good in the economy? No, it will not be stable yet. Simple point of fact, you cannot have something stable that is growing massively. End of story. That's all we have to, that's the end of it. So now you have to stop and ask, now it becomes a completely different question, is why is Bitcoin growing massively? Why is Bitcoin so volatile? It's because there is an incredible potential there that is not yet found. And we are in the path of price discovery from a monetary good that has no adoption to one that will have a massive, broad market using it as money. And I know, because I will be doing that. I am participating in it. I'm a little bit annoyed that I have a sponsor for this show that I can't get them to pay me in Bitcoin. So I already use it as money. I want all of my money paid to me in Bitcoin. I am scared. I am legit nervous about holding my money or holding my value in anything else. And maybe it's taken, I don't know exactly when that shift happened, but I feel comfortable when I'm holding Bitcoin. When I have value in anything else, it scares the crap out of me. I'm like, how quickly can I get this into Bitcoin? And sometimes I'm willing to take a crappy price in order to do that safer or do that faster so that I can go to sleep and not have to think about it. It was probably during the, actually, I can probably tell you when that happened. It was sometimes in the altcoin casino days that I think that transition happened, because fiat just started getting lumped in with the whole altcoin market. Everything that was an altcoin, fiat was one of those. So it's really interesting to see that happen, or to try to look back and see when it happens, because it's one of those things that just really creeps up on you, and then suddenly, gradually, then suddenly, here I am. Bitcoin is the only money to me. As we advance toward that future state of full adoption, of course it's going to be volatile, but I'm not concerned. I have a much longer time preference than I've ever had before in my life. I think about these things on scales of years, and I just think, okay, price is low. I'm not going to really spend much lately. I'm going to buckle down, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to try to pump out as much value into the world as I can, because I want to be a part of this stable future where you can actually get your privacy back, where money is something that we own collectively, not something that is forced down our throats, that the value of the money is based on the productivity of our market and our economic activity. That is what will produce Bitcoin's value when it is the most liquid good, the value of the economy. Right now, it is determined by the political whims of a bunch of politicians and central bankers. They decide how much it's worth, and if it's inconvenient for them, then we will not be able to save our funds. We will not be able to turn our labor into reliable value that will stay with us. It will be taken. And when you start to see those key pieces of the whole puzzle that really explain what is a good money, what is a bad money, why do monies die, why does fiat money only last for 27 years? Why is that the average lifespan of fiat money? I'm doing the audiobook right now for the Little Bitcoin book. A lot of you may have seen that book coming out, and it's a lot of great stuff in it. This is going to be a great one to cover. I wish I could drop it as a podcast episode, but I highly recommend that book. So you guys should definitely check that out too. I'll have the audiobook soon. I don't know how long it's going to take. I'm a little bit picky about my sound quality and what I usually let get away with in like a normal podcast episode. I want it to be a little bit better in my audiobook. I got to really hunker down here. So We'll see how long it takes. But let's go ahead and end this one here. A huge thank you to Parker Lewis for this article. And don't forget to check out unchained-capital.com and check out their blog. There are so many great pieces up here. And like I said, we will be definitely hitting a number of them on the show in the future because there's a lot of great stuff to talk about. So thank you for joining me, everybody. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And this is the place where you are going to learn about every aspect of the crypto economy, where we are going to dive in and explore every topic, every brilliant written piece by every author in this space. We are going to tackle it all. We're going to turn it all into audio so that everyone can consume it. Because I think it's our obligation to be good stewards of this future that we're headed into. And I think the faster and the more we can learn about it, the more prepared we will be for when it finally arrives. And the more sure it's our job to make sure it happens properly, that we actually get to that future where we are digitally sovereign, where we have gotten our privacy back and we own our own information and our own lives in the digital space, because we will lose it if we don't do this right. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support my work and in making all of this incredible content available to you guys and everyone else out there interested in Bitcoin and the crypto economy, then become a patron at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy, and you'll get to join us in the Crypto Economy Crew Telegram group. We've got a really fun little group, and I have been loving it's starting to replace my Twitter time wasting. So I'm really enjoying that group, and thank you to all the guys who are in there. You guys are really awesome. So become a patron and help support my work. But if that's a little bit too difficult for you, one thing you can definitely do to support this show is just share it out. Share it with two or three people that you know who are interested in Bitcoin, who want to go down the rabbit hole or are sitting on the edge of it wondering what the hell's going on down there. What's this big party about? Send them to The Crypto Economy with Guy Swan. I will be here to tell them all about it. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.